From the 30 by 30 plan to the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline to the sanctions against Russia, energy production is on everyone's mind these days. You may also be asking yourself, how is Montana's economy affected by the ongoing conflict in Ukraine? In this episode of the podcast, our Governor Greg Gianforte calls in to talk about these implications for the Treasure State, along with recent employment numbers, trade school developments, what he's been up to recently, and what he's got planned for the weeks ahead. Did you know Whitehall High School has its own lumber mill? Well, the governor recently stopped by there and got to see the unique CTE program firsthand, so he's got a lot to talk about. Later in the show, we take a deeper dive into the economic fallout of the Russo-Ukrainian war with Bureau of Business and Economic Research Associate Director Dr. Robert Tino Sonora, as he is wrapping up the Bureau's Economic Outlook Seminar in Havre. This episode's got our state interests, national interests, and international interests all covered, plus a little bit more. So enjoy these discussions with Governor Greg Gianforte and Dr. Sonora.
Let's get to Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, our state's 25th governor. Honored and a pleasure to have you here, sir. How are you doing, Greg?
Hey, Tom. It's good to be with you.
Thank you for being here. Let's start with the Russo-Ukrainian conflict. And I know that you've directed Montana to take some actions to divest itself from Russian interests. How many Russian interests does the state have? And more, I guess, generally, how do you protect Montana's interests during this time?
Well, thanks, Tom, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir.
Honestly, we have minimal interests in the state investments. It's about $15 million. We've directed the Board of Investments to get rid of that. That's out of tens of billions of dollars in pension funds. They're independent. They're kind of tangential investments. But my bigger concern is, you know, Putin is a thug. He's a dictator. He has crossed the boundaries here. And it just highlights why we have to pursue energy independence. That's the best way to represent Montana's interests and our country's interests. And that's why I sent a letter to President Biden this week asking him to do three specific things. One is reinstate the Keystone XL pipeline. Secondly, to lift the moratorium on oil and gas exploration on federal lands. And third, to peel back the extra regulations they added to make it harder to do oil and gas exploration. When we have to buy energy from our enemies, including Russia, we are less safe. When we are energy independent and can actually supply energy to our friends, the world is safer. It's really that simple.
And I guess I ask this question because I know the administration is getting these calls actually from both sides of the aisle as well. Have you gotten any response? This is I don't know if they're bending on this issue whatsoever. I know it's very political, especially from their perspective.
Well, you know, I think we're unified in our opposition to what Putin's doing. I was pleased to see the Germans terminate the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. And it was really a wake-up call for Western Europe. I'm pleased to see the additional work going into building liquid natural gas export facilities and import facilities in Europe. We have plenty of gas, and we should be supplying it to our friends.
Energy and agriculture seems to be, you know, how Montana's connected to Russia in a large degree. How do you see, you know, these moratoriums, these sanctions affecting Montana?
Well, we don't have that much trade with Russia, but we shouldn't be doing any. That's why we got rid of the investments. Ag is our number one industry. Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe.
Yeah.
This is why we've seen a bump in grain prices here. That's going to be good for Montana producers. And it's the reason why next week I'm declaring next week Ag Week in Montana. And I'm looking forward to getting out. The truth, I always say, Tom, the truth doesn't live here in Helena. I'll be in Billings next week, Miles City, Terry, Ekalaka, visiting with a bunch of our producers. And second annual declaring March 20th Meat Day. So we're going to celebrate Montana beef, and I'm sure I'm going to try and tie into a big hunk of beef on, as I do many days. On Meat Day.
Yeah. It was really fun last year. You're going to do something similar
It was fun because of Governor Polis down in Colorado declaring it was anti-meat day. So I couldn't let that pass without tying into a big ribeye.
We like that. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte is with us here, and he's only this happens almost all the time. So give me a call early if you want to talk to the governor, 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483 to text a message here. Always open to phone calls, but we usually it happens every time, Governor, where you get off at 928 and then we got two phone calls. Hey, is the governor still on? No, we just missed him. So encouraging.
Well,
you guys.
We always love to hear. Tom, we always love to hear from folks, and if people don't get their question answered, we get hundreds of calls into the governor's office every week. You can just go to governor.mt.gov. We love to hear from folks. We get back, if we can't answer the question, when you submit it right away, we get back to people within a day or two. We respond to everybody that contacts us. And we'd love to hear from you, find out what's going on, and if there's something we can do, we'd love to be of service.
Well, and you get out an awful lot, too, into the public. And I want to talk about your veteran accommodation program here a little bit. But as you had noted, with Agricultural Week next week, and we just saw your director of ag at the Made in Montana show was on the air with us. What do you take away from those guys?
Well, this is the backbone of our economy. It also protects our ag producers are the conservationists that are protecting our landscapes. We got more than 27,000 working farms and ranches in the state today. Doesn't matter if it's beef or barley. Our farmers and ranchers produce the best products, and we're feeding the world. That's why last week I was thrilled we allocated about $900,000 in value-added ag programs to producers across the state. And I think this is really a key thing. Our strategy at the Department of Ag, and Christy Clark is doing a great job there as our director, but it's really to preserve the Montana brand through the supply chain. I was looking at some numbers yesterday. There's been concern about processing capacity, particularly for our beef producers, our ranchers, and in terms of state inspected facilities. So far this year, it looks like we'll be up over 50% headcount over last year. So we've been focusing on increasing processing capacity. We still have a long way to go, but we're making progress.
And this list is pretty impressive when you talk about the amount of money. I mean, it's close to $1 million, 24 programs to be and we visited with a lot of these people. Pioneer Meats out of Big Timber. We talked with the folks from 41 Grains. I'm curious as to how. Now, I know there's been a lot of federal money, and I know there's strings tied to it. And in fact, the big string tied to it is if you don't spend the money, we'll send it to California or Washington or whatever. So you're coerced in that degree. In talking with your department heads over the year, they've all said we want to work this into the economy. We don't want to just dump it on. We want to work it into the economy. How is that process going with this federal infusion in many different areas that affect Montana?
Well, yeah, I think this spending by the feds is reckless. And what I've said very clearly is we're going to spend our grandchildren's money. Let's spend it in the way that our grandchildren benefit. So we broke it into four categories. First category is water and sewer. 80% of the money went into rural Montana. We're in our second tranche now. Ultimately, we're going to do over 100 projects, water and sewer projects, to build infrastructure that will be there for generations. That's category one. Category two is health and human services related. This is testing products in the schools, in our communities, public health. That was really specifically pandemic related. The third is broadband. We're going to use this to wire the state. We're making a record $275 million investment in putting fiber, and we're going to make sure we do it in areas that don't currently have coverage, so we're not doing redundant work. All of that money is going to be allocated by June of this year. And then the last category is economic development, and I just don't think the state government should be picking winners and losers in this program. So we allocated it to a program that runs through the banks to help them increase their confidence. They have to put some skin in the game, but it ups. And that program was completely subscribed within a couple of days. Put out another, I think it was about $50 million through that program. So, again, working through the banks, coming alongside them to increase their underwriting ability, particularly to help existing Montana businesses expand.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, the timing of these grants, do you think we're on time? There's been criticism that it comes out a little bit slow, but that's a you're danged if you do, danged if you don't kind of criticism too.
We're so far ahead of all the other states. I mean, this is fake news. Frankly, and like they're giving us a hard time about water and sewer. The Fed said the money can only be distributed on a reimbursement basis. So the project has to be completed before we write the check. And we don't even have all the money yet. And we're not going to give away money that we haven't received from the feds yet because things change.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that approach. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, we talk about water and sewer. I think it's an unprecedented opportunity to really help St. Mary and that diversion system. And I know that you've focused on it. You've been up there several times. You've talked with people. The feds, I'm not sure that they're going to pony up like I think that they should in this regard. Where does that stand, this whole project?
Yeah, I'm encouraged. And we know, St. Mary's is a lifeline for the entire High Line. It's the domestic water in a lot of communities, 140,000 irrigated acres. If that went dry, the Milk River goes dry 6 out of 10 years if we didn't have St. Mary's. So, and that is water for all those communities, Chinook, Havre, all the way across the High Line. I was really pleased. I was up there when we cut the ribbon on Drop 5, doing that replacement. When it's Congress, I got the money. I think we have the infrastructure dollars now to get St. Mary's done. I do have a meeting coming up, so I'm about to get a brief here in the next couple of weeks. But I think we have a path forward to get St. Mary's upgraded, so it'll be good for another 100 years.
Oh, I think that's vital, and I really appreciate the focus there. I've got just about 20 seconds here. The red tape report going to come out soon?
Well, we're taking action as we can. We just changed the apprenticeship rules. We have a board that oversees hearing aid dispensers. And that's a cost to taxpayers of no value. So we're going to keep turning the rocks over. We're finding, you need a Husker's license to sell an apple in the state of Montana? Uh-huh. I think we should get rid of that. Anyway, there's lots of stuff.
Great. Thank you for that. We're going to stand by. Governor Greg Gianforte is with us here. We're going to get into our unemployment figures in Montana. Unprecedented. Good news there. Back with more Voices in a bit.
At American National, what's important to you is important to us. Don't you deserve an insurance plan custom fit to meet your specific needs? American National offers flexible farm and ranch policies with customizable package options to help protect your livestock. We're right by your side, ready to help protect what matters most to you. For more information and to connect with a local American National agent, just visit an.insure/northwest. American National Property and Casualty Company and Affiliates, Springfield, Missouri.
Our Montana Governor Greg Gianforte is with us, the state's 25th governor, of course, spent a number of years in the private sector, along with First Lady Susan, founded Right Now Technologies from scratch, a basement bootstrapping sort of thing, and wind up being a pretty good endeavor. Greg, our governor, thank you again for being here. Appreciate that. I want to talk about, as we look at, those construction figures, 11% increase in construction jobs, our unemployment here in Montana at an all-time low. Cause and effect of that.
Yeah, Tom, thanks again for having me on. It's important. We have a housing shortage in the state, so I'm thrilled to see the uptick in construction. That's why we've made it such a huge emphasis in our administration on trades education. And I've been getting out, visiting high schools and two-year colleges. We added the M-Tech program in the last legislature. This is one of the few things we spent some money on, but it'll pay any employer in the state of Montana 50% of the scholarship money to get somebody trained to be a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician. It's why we changed the apprenticeship rules so that we can get more apprentices into the electrical trade and other skilled trades. So it's good to see the private sector responding. Many communities, we just don't have enough housing units.
The unemployment, though, has caused, or that low unemployment has caused certain problems in Montana, but we've had these problems, I guess, the labor force issue for a number of years. Any movement?
Well, again, you mentioned unemployment. We just hit an all-time low of 2.7% in January. And that's a direct result of our policies. I mean, we've lowered taxes, we've reduced regulations, we've invested in trades, but there's still a skills gap. And many employers, as I talked to them, one of the consequences of that low employment is it's hard to find people. And that's why we've got to invest to close the skills gap to help. I was just out at Helena College last week. The legislature appropriated a little bit of money, about $500,000. The local union added $500,000, and a school out of the Midwest added another $1 million. Wow. And they're using virtual reality to teach people the trades. They let me actually put the goggles on. I got onto a man lift, and I had to go through the certification, and it was like being on the actual equipment. You could look around. You could see the seagulls flying over or birds or whatever, and actually operate the machinery. And this is a remarkable new technology. This is brand new. Helena College is the first one to implement it, but it allows us to train a lot more people in the trades.
Yeah, we're going to get a phone call out and talk more about that here on the program. You were also at Whitehall High School talking about career and tech education with those students.
Well, they're doing a remarkable job down there in Whitehall. It was fun to be with them. They're like the only high school in the state that actually has a sawmill. And I enjoy talking to the kids. They have questions about how does our government work and this kind of stuff. But I got to put the ear protection on, eye protection, and actually watch these young people operate the sawmill. And you could see that they took a lot of pride in their work. And it was good to see that they were learning that working with your hands is noble. And there may actually be a career in front of them as a result.
Do the students warm up quicker when you put the hard hat on and you put the goggles on and you stand in front of the woodland mills?
I enjoy getting into these high schools, and yeah. I love doing the assemblies and things, but when I can focus my attention on what they're doing, on what they're learning, I find that, their engagement goes up a couple of notches.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like getting in front of those settings. Here, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, we got just 1 minute here, and I want to get a comment because you've continued this Veterans Commendation Program just released. It was early February, 31 to be honored this upcoming year for work done last year. You carried this over from Congress to the State House. Been doing it for a number of years, and I know you try to visit each one personally, and that gives you a chance to get one-on-one with our veterans. What have you learned over the length of this program in doing that, sir?
Well, it's never the wrong time to honor those that have served our country in uniform. So we created this Veterans Commendation Program to do exactly that. And we don't pick them. The veterans nominate their peers, and the criteria is really simple. We want someone who has worn the uniform of the United States in service and then come back and served in their community. And Tom, I'll tell you, it's not hard to find these folks. They are selfless in the work they do. We'll go into the local American Legion or VFW, and the whole community comes out, and I fly a flag here at the state capitol in their honor. We put that in a shadow box. We take it out. I present it. We review the work that they've done. And it's a way to honor, honestly, everyone who's worn the uniform. So I'll be traveling around the state this year, meeting with these exceptional individuals who have served our country and now served in their community.
And you get that rare chance, or I don't know how rare it is, but you get that precious opportunity to get one-on-one with these veterans.
Oh, it's great. And, it's just it's just an awesome experience to visit with these folks and hear their stories and concerns. And then that makes it easier for me to serve when I get back here to Helena.
Comment here, just to pass it along from the something regarding the woke crowd. I won't pass that along, but there's another one here about keep working for us. I think that was in relation to St. Mary's, too, on the text line. So please do that,
well,
sir.
I will. Tom, we're just getting started. We've had a good first year. But there's still a few rocks in the rock pile, so we'll stay after it.
All right. I appreciate that. I know your sleeves are rolled up. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte. Tino Sonora is going to be next here as we dive into the economy of war, the economics of conflict. Let's get some headlines first.
Montana State University is proud to be named a top 10 military-friendly school by MilitaryFriendly.com. Ranking third among peer institutions, Montana State is honored to serve more than 530 veteran students. Next time you're on campus in Bozeman, visit the new Travis W. Adkins Veteran Support Center in Romney Hall, home to MSU's veteran student community and support services for veteran students. Learn more at montana.edu/veteran.
Let's first welcome Dr. Robert Sonoratino, Associate Director of the BBER and Director of Healthcare Research. He's a senior research professor. As I mentioned earlier, too, a two-time Fulbright recipient, had been in Croatia, teaching there as well, has got the, I guess, the lay of the land when it comes to this Ukrainian conflict. Dr. Sonora, how you doing?
All right, Tom, how are you? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Appreciate that. First of all, I know with some of your background teaching in those areas, Slovenia, Austria, Croatia, you know, what are your thoughts? We'll get to the economy here in just a little bit. But what are your thoughts for the people on the ground initially?
Well, there or here. I think there in Croatia in particular, one of the concerns they're having is will this bleed over into Bosnia? The Bosnian resolution was never fully resolved. It was basically split into three states, the Serbs, the Croats, and then the Muslims. And, you know, there's some rising Serb nationalism going on. So I think from that neck of the woods, that's one of the concerns is will there be another sort of Yugoslav civil war, Bosnian civil war? So, and that could have a fairly substantial impact on the area. And I think, you know, just going back to that, you know, in Croatia, they're seeing a decline in visits and stuff. So it could have potential, you know, bleed over into other regions as well.
Well, and that's the, I think the unspoken scary part about all this, and it's not just entirely completely unspoken, but the possible expansion of this conflict, how are investors trying to, well, I'm going to ask first, you know, what do you read from the stock market in terms of their reaction to this Russo-Ukrainian war? And then I guess underneath all of that, they've got to be considering the possibility for an expansion of this war.
Well, I think right now the stock markets, you know, as we like to say in economics, have already priced the crisis, this war into their prices. So I think you'll see some volatility. I think that's going to be, you know, if you look at the markets, there'll be continued volatility in the markets. But, you know, I think that the markets have already priced this in. And I'm looking at the Dow Jones right now and it's up 356 points. Day took a little bit of hit, but it's back to where it was, you know, almost pre-war. So that's kind of my take right now. The markets are kind of bouncing around because what's happening in oil markets. There was concern that you know, there'd be declines in supply and pushing up prices in oil markets. But yesterday, oil for delivery in April fell below $100, and so that pushed up the market yesterday. And so there's a lot of other, I mean, it's not just oil, but that's kind of where I see things going. I think the next thing to think about is that Russia's got some debt service that's got to come up. It's got no dollars really, so it can't repay its debts in dollars. So they've made an offer of repaying it in rubles. And from what I was reading this morning, that's already been priced in the markets too. So I think the markets have kind of, so far, I mean, obviously, you know, there could be a huge change, in the next 5 minutes, and that will affect everything. But right now, if we kind of continue on the status quo, the markets seem to have priced this already into it.
And that would be, well, thank you for that professional take. That's sort of like my novice take is, I'm not sure the markets are really taking this seriously or really care, or maybe they're shielded in more ways than I can imagine from this potential conflict.
Well, they could be. It could be. And I think, we were talking about earlier, if this does bleed into a wider sort of regional war, then that could be that. I think that's going to be the problem. I mean, you know, I, from an economics, purely subjective or purely objective level, you know, these aren't huge, huge economies that have a huge impact. You know, the reason I think that these economies are sort of worried global markets is because of oil, natural gas, of course, and then also some of their agricultural exports. Russia and Ukraine account for roughly 30% of all wheat exports, for example. So, I mean, it will have a pretty pronounced effect on commodity prices, which will impact us here. Obviously, global prices should start rising for commodities, not just wheat, but generally when you have a commodity, one single commodity price increase, it tends to bleed over to other commodities as well. So we probably can look forward to seeing some of these prices of wheat, corn, et cetera, rising over the foreseeable future, unless this comes to early and good resolution.
Let me ask this, an experiment in financial combat that is unprecedented. That's how one economist, Michael Sullivan, he's a writer, a hedge funds guy. And I'm seeing that in other areas too, where economists are saying that these are unprecedented sanctions. Do you believe that?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with, sanctions and the size, but it seems to me that it's a huge sanction. And limiting access to global financial markets is taking quite a hit. As you're probably aware, the ruble dropped precipitously.
Yeah.
It was trading probably about one cent to the ruble, a decline of dozens or hundreds of percent.
Right? Yeah.
So it's reflecting, and what that's going to impact is, of course, is Russia's ability to buy goods in foreign markets, and it's really going to impact the Russian economy very, very, very severely as well. I mean, that's something that the average Russian is going to pay the price for a lot of these sanctions. And yeah, you have Abramovich's, yacht has been untaken, and people are not able to get visas and these kinds of things. But I think it's going to be the Russian population that's going to bear a lot of the pain that these sanctions are going to impact. Although they try to sort of focus them on a small kind of group of people, it's kind of hard to see that how such a blunt instrument can really have an impact on just such a small group of people.
And over the long term, there's some concern that, like you said, Russia's overall GDP, it's not, like 1.3 trillion or something. It's really down the list, but they could take a permanent hit because of these. 20% is what some people are expecting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge, and I think it's going to be long lasting. Unfortunately, again, for the people of Russia, the residents of Russia, I think I think this is going to kind of isolate them for quite some time, which is going to be really, really problematic for them. They'll have less access to financial markets as well as trade. There will always be a group of countries, I think, that will be willing to trade with them that are sort of in their sphere of influence. But suffice to say, for most Western markets, unfortunately, it could take some time before they actually or gain that access to global financial and goods and services markets.
What happens when a company cuts ties with Russia? What happens in that process?
Well, obviously there's jobs lost. So you take an immediate hit in terms of people who are working for, say, a McDonald's, which pulled out last week, who people work there. You see a decline in people who've gotten used to, access to foreign goods and services. And that's probably, that just takes a hit on their welfare. So have the multiplier effect that ripple through the economy as those people that were working at McDonald's are no longer doing so, and they tend, and then that ripples through the economy. So that's going to lead to the recession. And I think too, what's sort of, we don't talk about that much, is the decline in the exchange rate. It's just the depreciation of the ruble just is going to make all goods that are imported into Russia that much more expensive, which will really drive up inflation. The Russian central bank pushed up interest rates to over 20% to prevent rubles from leaving the country. They're starting trying to circle the wagons, if you will, on their currency and preventing those rubles from leaving because they don't want to see such a drastic decline in their currency. But it's already happened. And so now Russians are having to pay, astronomical interest rates on anything from, car loans to credit cards. If they even have access to it, if those financial markets start to dry up, they won't even have access to it.
Dr. Robert.
Which will push up interest rates even more.
Yeah. Dr. Robert Sonora is with us. Tino, we call him, Associate Director of the BBER, Director of Health care research, as I mentioned, too, some experience overseas in the education system. Oil and gas, you know, there's talk about what is reality versus what is perception when it comes to the U.S. Losing its energy independence. You know, what do you see for the oil and gas markets over the long term here?
Well, I don't think we're going to lose our energy independence. You know, that's obviously been a goal. The United States is the largest producer of oil and natural gas. Russia's the largest producer, but we produce a lot of natural gas here, and we produce a lot of our own oil. And obviously, the technologies that have enabled us to gain access to hitherto known reserves, but we couldn't do because of fracking and what have you, really expanded the market and lowered the cost of extracting oil. So I don't see in the long run a real issue with that. This is just, you know, from my perspective as an economist, again, purely objectively, this will be a short-term shock. I've been proven wrong before, and I may be proven wrong again, but I suspect that's what's going to happen. I think markets will start to adjust to this kind of new norm, if you will. Will we ever see, you know, $30 a barrel? I don't think so, but yeah. But certainly not crazy. And we got to remember too that gas prices are high, and I know people feel a lot of pain. And we're fortunate here in Montana. The average price of gas, I believe, I heard today was about $4.30, and that's national average. And we're about $4 from what I've seen, purely anecdotally. And when you adjust for inflation, it's actually, you know, it's a little bit lower than that. So it's not. We haven't reached sort of the 2008 highs that we saw in gas prices in the aftermath of the financial crisis. Once you've adjusted for inflation,
how much of the current price of gas is in response to the administration's policy regarding our oil and gas leases, offshore drilling, the Keystone Pipeline? Obviously, they have circled their wagons. How much of the price of gas is perceptional?
I don't think it does have a huge impact, frankly. You know, we live in a global market, so when you do have when you face these global prices, that's what's primarily changing things. In terms of gas prices, we also got to remember, you know, that when price of oil goes up, you know, gas prices go up, but it's not just because oil prices are going up. It's, you know, potentially refineries are busy producing other types of goods, such as heating oil or diesel. And so it takes a little time to sort of retool your refinery to get it producing gasoline again. I think one of the biggest things that we, in terms of price differences across the states, is just, you know, every state's got its own different regulations, and that really drives a lot of the price disparities in the states. You know, you got California, which has extremely restrictive anti-pollution regulations on its gasoline, and that's, you know, which is why you see California gas prices being, you know, $2 above the national average. Another talk that's been going on is reducing the transportation costs the gas taxes on gallons of gas. And again, that's maybe 30 cents a gallon. I don't think that's going to have a huge impact. And again, we don't want to undermine our infrastructure because it could have sort of deleterious effects down the road. And so, you know, there's a debate going on whether we should repeal, you know, at least put a little tax holiday, yes or no. And I think most economists would say it's probably not a good idea.
I don't know that it does much outside of, you know, change the calendar.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Let's ask about supply chain. There's another COVID outbreak in China, although it's hard to tell, you know, what are solid numbers from China. I got about a minute on this one. Are we making progress in diversifying our supply chain?
That's a great question, and that's going to be one that's, you know, we won't know for a while. I think there's some, you know, labor costs in other countries are so low that it's going to be really difficult without serious technological developments in the States for us to sort of retool our supply chain. We saw a taste for goods during COVID. You know, people are at home. What are they going to do? They're going to go on Amazon. And so our taste never really declined for buying stuff. And, you know, if you can get it cheaper at Walmart than you can at, some Chinese produced good versus some American cheap price good, I think people are going to still buy the Chinese goods. And you got to bear in mind, too, these imported prices are helping keeping prices down and actually keeping inflation in check. And so a lot of the inflation that we're seeing is because of the supply chain moving from east to west. But if we hadn't had that, perhaps prices would have been quite substantially higher than if those international trade flows didn't exist.
I always enjoy our conversations. I always get so much from them. I appreciate you spending some time. I know you're, wrapping up your Economic Outlook Seminar series in Havre. Say hello to all my friends up there. Appreciate that, Tino, and be well. Are you doing anything for St. Patty's Day?
I'm probably going out for dinner and riding my bike.
All right. I know. It's just a huge, huge celebration for everybody, right? Yeah.
It exactly is. Maybe it's best to stay at home, right?
Thank you, Tino. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Tom. Take care.
Yep. We'll talk to Dr. Sonora again here down the road.